If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Everton stunned Chelsea to keep their survival hopes alive, while Arsenal keep a nose in front in a North London chase for Champions League football. Rafael Leao ensures Milan remain the Scudetto frontrunners, while Real Madrid are crowned La Liga champions. The points are split in the Al Firm and much more as Qué Golazo Weekend Recap with Heath Pierce begins right now. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Qué Golazo, our weekend recap. YouTube.com/Qué Golazo, Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter. We want your comments. We want your questions. If you're an Arsenal fan, how are you feeling? If you're a Tottenham, how are you feeling? If you're a West Ham fan, how are you feeling? Everybody, how are you feeling? Heath Pierce, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good. I feel relieved. I feel nervous. LME, you know, anytime that Villa are in this chase for certain things, it feels good, but it also feels like, am I too excited? Where should I rest my excitement and my anxiety at the same time? But great weekend for football, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Absolutely, yeah. I know what you mean, but I think, you know, we never chase for anything, Villa. We're running away from things. But I get what you're saying.
The big boulder that's chasing you down the hill type of thing, you know?
Exactly. Last night, I dreamt that the hamburger was eating me. That's exactly the sentiment that Villa fans have every time. But welcome, everybody. It's good to have Heath Pierce, HP, in the house from In Soccer We Trust. A lot of really good stuff over there, Heath Pierce, so I commend you. You talked to Hector Moreno this past weekend.
We did. He was this week. Yeah, he was amazing. It was actually really a nice relief. You know, obviously in the context of most current players, they talk about the season. They're very guarded into those types of things. But he was very open in a way that you wouldn't expect from a current player. And it was more of a conversation than an interview of question-answer, which was, you know, I think is good. And I mean, he's going to be able to do whatever he wants when he's done playing. But to have somebody like that, especially from the Mexican side, who probably, I mean, not probably, they get it way worse than we do in the U.S. in terms of the media, you know, it would be really easy for you to just shut down. But he just continues to open up and makes for fun conversation. So if anybody who hasn't heard it or watched it, go on over to In Soccer We Trust and take a look. I appreciate LME giving me the opportunity to plug that a little bit.
Absolutely, man. I mean, and Hector is a great guy. He's a friend. Yeah, I know how good he is in English and Spanish. So, you know, doing some commentary, so them good stuff there. Where are you, by the way, HP? You're not in your usual settings.
I am in Phoenix, well, in the suburbs of Phoenix, in Mesa, Arizona. We've got our Alianza de Football finals. So here we got the National Showcase. We've got the Sueño kids. This is the profiles. So we have all these kids trying out in front of, 50-plus scouts. Across the board from different MLS teams, US Soccer, FMF, Liga MX. So a number of these Hispanic kids who've been selected from the different 10 different cities that we do our tours in are now here to be able to play some matches in front of some scouts. So it should be we've got other programming as well, an adult tournament that's wrapping up today. We have a youth tournament that's wrapping up today, but this is the tryout portion of it is the thing I'm most excited about. But yeah, I'm here for the next few days and it should be a really fun and very hot experience, by the way. It's 64, 65, 66 where I left in LA this morning. It's 94, 95, and 96 while I'm here in Arizona. So sunblock.
Hey, like the old rap lyric says, hey, we don't stop hotter than an Arizona rooftop. And you know that Arizona is hot, hot, hot. And by the way, Alianza de Football and everything that you guys do there with Ventures, it's really great. I know that I covered it a little bit when I was with Sports Illustrated, given Hispanic communities a chance to shine. I love it, man. So keep it up. Love all that stuff. Trey Stockton is in the chat. I know he's saying, Hala Madrid. I know that we're getting a lot of Real Madrid fans happy. Yeah. I'm very happy for you. We're going to talk about it, Madrid fans. I promise you. There is no bigger Carlo Ancelotti fan than yours truly. I promise. We'll talk about it. But we have to begin with some sad news. Sadly, as everything was kicking off on Saturday, Mino Raiola, the super agent, passed away. Obviously, very sad to hear that. He leaves a legacy behind. Our friend Fabrizio Romano covering and obviously knows his rise and obviously his life as well. Our friend Gab Marcotti wrote a really great piece as well on ESPN. So, you know, we just wanted to take this moment to send our condolences to his family, his loved ones. You know, many of us obviously didn't know him personally, but over three decades, Raiola represented, you know, some of the best names in Europe, from Dennis Bergkamp to Nedved, Ibrahimovic, Balotelli, De Ligt, Pogba, Haaland. You know, he leaves behind quite the imprint on football, Heath Pierce. And, you know, when somebody passes away, especially as somebody as influential as Mino Raiola, you know, the football world comes together and just sends his condolences to his family and his loved ones.
Yeah, you know, not only did he have some top players, but he had some of the biggest superstars and egos that we've been blessed with in the football world. And to navigate that as a personal assistant, mentor, father figure, agent, super agent, you know, delivery service driver, all the things that you have to do to keep these people happy. It's a remarkable career and an imprint that he's left on the game. So obviously our condolences to the entire football community and Mino's family most specifically.
Yeah. And I really recommend everybody to read my friend Gab Marcotti's piece regarding his life. You know, you'll get to know a little bit more about him, more than just the professional side of him, but our condolences to his family and his loved ones. All right, we're going to move on here. As we said, we're recapping the weekend. We got plenty to discuss, including a Champions League report. We'll give you some updates, and Heath and yours truly will give you a report on the teams that obviously have to face each other in the second leg of the semifinals of the Champions League. And that's after the Premier League recap. We'll do some Serie A notes as well as Bundesliga, the old firm as well. Happened earlier today, and some final thoughts from around the globe. All right, let's begin with happy Heath Pierce, happy Arsenal fans after, you know, Tottenham did the job earlier today as they beat Leicester 3-1 and obviously added the pressure on that top four race. We know what's going on with Man City and Liverpool, so obviously Chelsea still hanging on, but that fourth spot is crucial. And Arsenal beat West Ham. Give me your thoughts. A very tricky situation, but defensively, very impressive, Heath Pierce. But in the end, the Gunners take 3 points over the Hammers.
Yeah, I mean, the Hammers were good, and it went back and forth for a decent amount of time there. And but this is a professional performance that I really liked from Arsenal, being able to get their lead and keep it. Obviously went up once before, gave up a goal just before the half, and to go into the second half and hold on the way that they did, I think is a remarkable growth of this team, who I think at times would have given up a goal, even if they're not playing at their particularly best. What I'm interested in now is how this, you know, we're talking about the top four race, but Chelsea are not clear anymore of third. You know, Arsenal are 3 points. Granted, both, I think Arsenal have got a pretty tricky schedule to see the season out. Spurs have a pretty tricky schedule to see the season out. I think in terms of Chelsea themselves, probably have the easier of the final games within the season, but still it's no cakewalk for them. They have not been at their best in the last sort of, I guess, month or so. And it'll be interesting to see the way this starts to take shape. Now, you know, LME, if you were a betting man, do you think that there could be a potential sort of top three mix in this with Chelsea, or do you think this is about, you know, Spurs or Arsenal? And if so, like, who needs it more, but who do you think actually finishes off? We can talk about who needs it more after, but.
Yeah, no, a very good question, my friend. And we're going to get into the Everton-Chelsea game, but you do bring up a good point. Chelsea's only 3 points above Arsenal. Arsenal, by the way, a really good job today over West Ham. Defensively, I was very impressed. After Arsenal went 2-1 up, you know, and obviously I would, you know, give us your comments on the Ramsdale-Jared Bowen situation, but defensively, it was very difficult for West Ham to break them down. Arsenal were very good, very resilient. You know, it wasn't just a creative side. And that's something that I've been noticing a lot from Arsenal. To your point, obviously, they had to do the business after Tottenham took care of business of themselves against Leicester City. And the question for everybody, which is a good one, Heath Pierce, is like, what is happening now to Chelsea, of course. And I'm looking at that last game, by the way, you know, not the last game, but the North London derby between Arsenal and Tottenham will be crucial. But now the remaining matches for Chelsea, they're going to face Wolves away at Leeds, who are like scrambling to stay in the Premier League, of course. Then they got the FA Cup final. So how much is that going to be of a nuisance for them after they go for their own trophy there? Then they're hosting Leicester City and then at home to Watford. So, you know, it is pretty interesting in terms of like the remaining schedule for them. Lukaku was not used at all today, Heath Pierce. So, yeah, I know that we're talking a little about Chelsea right now, but they've got their own issues. And obviously the biggest one, which I think remains on the proverbial shoulders of every Chelsea personnel, which is what happened with Roman Abramovich and the sale. And I feel like Arsenal and Tottenham are taking full advantage of this now. And it's interesting. The goal differential between Chelsea and Arsenal is substantial. So I think that Chelsea should be fine with that third spot. It's really the fight for fourth, Heath Pierce. I think that the North London will dictate a lot of that. But I'll throw a question back to you and to everybody, Heath. Who needs this more, this fourth spot? Arsenal or Tottenham?
I mean, I'm trying to make this seem not selfish in terms of the way that I answer this, but I think Arsenal do. I think there's been this ebb and flow throughout the season. Don't get me wrong. Spurs have had the same ebb and flow, perhaps even worse in terms of the form of the season. Harry Kane, Heung-min Son, not being great to start the year, now being arguably one of the best players in the Premier League, at least over the last month or two, on who needs this more. And I think Spurs probably, here's what I think. Arsenal need it more because I think it will justify the signings that they need to bring in to add to this youth and this crop and this sort of where they're at in this project. I think they really need that to get the Champions League to be able to do that, justify the spending. Whereas Spurs, I think Spurs are actually at a point that we saw in January of wanting to clean house with some of these players. I still think that Harry Kane could go in the summer, and perhaps they don't make those changes if they do qualify for Champions League. Maybe they do. I don't know. It just feels like, for me, Arsenal need that to justify that moment, whereas Spurs, I think, are going to continue to go through this evolution of players change. So I guess they would need it just as much because of the funds and things like that. But for me, selfishly, and I guess non-selfishly, I think Arsenal need it the most just to justify what they've been doing, justify the fact that you can still get results with young players and inexperienced players on the field. And then for me as a fan, I want to see Arsenal in the Champions League, but I want to see a good Arsenal. I don't want to see an Arsenal that just finishes fourth and don't even make, you know, Europa League or drop out of whatever. I want to see them going into that and then building a team that I think has, you know, slowly getting better. If you look at Arsenal, I mean, not Arsenal, if you look at Liverpool, you look at Man City, the year-over-year change isn't huge. It's sort of one, two players, surplus to requirements. Let's add pieces. Let's keep the core of the team together. Let's get the best out of those players. And I think both Arsenal and Spurs have the opportunity to do that. I don't think Spurs have the team of the future at the moment. I think they have the team of the now. And it could be the last ditch effort to get into the Champions League with those players before they move some of them on.
Yeah, it's a difficult question because it's all about...
I mean, I just talked myself in circles, by the way, for 3 minutes as to what's the more important. I mean, if I'm a Spurs fan, it's a Spurs. If it's Arsenal, it's Arsenal. But for the teams themselves, I don't know the answer to that of who is this more important for the exact reasons that I just talked in circles on.
Yeah, no, but that's why it's a difficult question, right? Because on one side, Arsenal are relying on the fact of what Mikel Arteta said a while ago, which is be patient, Arsenal fans. We are building something and hopefully it will come to fruition. And that's, you would think, the moment right now. This is it. You gotta really grab this Champions League spot. This is very important for the project. Arsenal fans will say to themselves, we've been patient, Mikel Arteta. We are seeing what you're doing. It's looking good. But, you know, the end product should be a Champions League spot. From a Tottenham perspective, it's less so much of a long project as opposed to this is why Antonio Conte is here. And if we don't get Champions League football, I'm a little bit worried about A, him and his future, and B, Harry Kane as well. I know that Rafa Cardenas just made a comment about no way Levy's going to let him go. Well, listen, I mean, how long?
The point?
Yeah. How long can you hold on to him for? I mean, unless obviously, can you turn down like 150 million from a Man City? I'm not saying it's going to happen, but like, you know, Champions League football is very important for both teams for similar reasons, but coming from different perspectives.
But that's sort of my, and it's hard to say now because Harry Kane's in phenomenal form right now. So it's not an argument that's necessarily justified. But if you do go to Champions League, the temptation is going to be that this is the year, this is the year, this is the year. And it's been the year for like 3 or 4 years for them now. And this is how I feel about David De Gea at Manchester United. Unbelievable player, has gotten them so many points. But at the same time, you start to go, well, it's not about whether or not he's a good player. It's about sort of moving on from the attempt that we had, kind of mending our wounds and moving on for the next thing. Whereas Harry Kane is, no matter what, you go to Champions League next year, if it doesn't work out or the team's not flying in Champions League, you're going to have the same conversations of, is he going to leave in January? He's going to leave at the end of the year. Whereas maybe you could get some money for him and you could whatever. Where I feel like that temptation of a Champions League spot would be the exact thing that makes this team stagnant versus, okay, yeah, Harry Kane in Champions League is for Spurs is better than not having Harry Kane. But it could be the thing you need to make the changes necessary to build for the future.
I'm just thinking, if I'm Harry Kane and I'm such a pivotal factor for the England team, which, by the way, the World Cup's in November, of course, and everything else, and I'm looking at all my national team teammates, similar to the Jack Grealish situation when he went to City, he wanted Champions League football. I feel like Harry Kane really wants that as well. It's important for both sides. It's going to be very crucial to see what happens. As we said, the North London derby will be a major factor. You mentioned Manchester United very quickly on that. What are your thoughts, by the way, on Ralph Rangnick and doubling up and playing the real life version of FIFA career mode, where he's going to be consulting Manchester United and also managing a national team on the weekends?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard for me to know what the life of a national team coach is like, but I know we saw Roberto Martinez was doing TV work. Thierry Henry was doing TV work. We see national team coaches clearly having the time on certain days to be able to put their time and energy into other things. So I don't want to devalue the ability to have free time and express yourself in other ways. But those are two massive projects, right? Austria falls short, finished behind Israel in World Cup qualifying. This is an Austrian side that used to be very, very good. And so that's going to be a project. And obviously, Ralf Rangnick loves projects. Man United are also a massive project. And now there's consulting there. And, you know, we put on the suit and tie and hop on the Zoom call every, you know, Tuesdays and Thursdays for 2 hours to walk through methodology and where are we going and be a lending hand. It seems like it's going to be a lighter job. But for the Austria thing, I think that would be clearly his full-time role. And the consulting thing might actually end up being something that was agreed upon to take the deal. And he would be a voice in the room, but probably not the voice in the room.
Yeah, my only thing is this, like Man United made their bet. Like you knew that he wasn't exclusive, so he could have easily done. So it's not Rangnick's fault. If he wants to bring something else, that's fine. It's just that to your point, United are a club that need everybody to be 100% in. Like even consulting, like everything just needs to be Manchester United. Manchester United, that needs to be my only focus. And then it's not good optics for Manchester United to suddenly be like, this guy who's currently managing your club, who's meant to be part of the voice when it comes to the direction of the future of the club, is now saying, oh, by the way, I'm going to be managing a national team as well. There's a big summer ahead for this club and Erik ten Hag. And there's a reason why in that Brentford game, you were hearing all over, you know, Glazers out, et cetera, because, you know, they want all this attention. It's just not good optics. You need everybody to be 100% on this thing. Like, I'm sorry. It's just,
yeah, I agree.
It's not Rangnick's fault. It's just that, you know, you're just asking for trouble when you're saying, oh, by the way, anybody that's involved in our club is also going to be managing a national team. Are you kidding? Come on. Come on, man.
Yeah,
come
optically, on. It's very, it's the last thing that you want optically if you're a Man United fan to be like, we've got a part-time guy right now that's, you know, working two jobs, three jobs. Like, optically, it's a worst-case scenario because whether or not he has the bandwidth or the capability to do that is irrelevant, right? Maybe he does. Maybe that is part of it. But optically, it looks really bad if you're a fan that's kind of on your last legs, that's exhausted, that's sort of been like, what are they doing here? How is this okay? It's not the best way to win people over is to not feel like either you're on or you're off. And if you're not fully in this, then we need to have somebody who is.
Yeah. And it's not Rangnick's fault. It's Manchester United's bad. And you made it, so you got to, you know, exactly line it or whatever. All right, very quickly, I know that you mentioned Chelsea, but Everton, what a massive win for Everton, by the way, earlier today as well. Jordan Pickford, I feel like he's on the ground longer than a Ken Burns documentary, but you know, it works for him, whatever. But what a performance from Jordan Pickford and Everton, by the way. And you know, it's amazing because now obviously they have a game in hand on Leeds United, who lost big time against Man City. Toffee's remaining fixtures, by the way, away at Leicester, away at Watford, at home to Brentford, at home to Palace, and then away at Arsenal. But you know, this is pretty intriguing now, Heath Pearce, because Watford lose to Burnley. We beat Norwich. Aston Villa beat Norwich. So sadly, Norwich goes down. So there's two spots left. You would think that Watford is done just because of the points. It's just too much as well. Yes. So now there's one spot left here. One spot left. Who is joining them? Are you worried about Leeds United, Heath Pearce?
I mean, I am. The turnaround of Burnley at the moment is nothing short of spectacular. Also, the fall of Everton, you go, oh, gosh, there's no, like, your mind tells you there's just no way Everton goes down, right? Just logically, there's no way Everton can go down just because of the quality that they have. I mean, they just literally beat Chelsea. And you saw a side, and again, this has been the Pickford argument all the time, which is like national team versus club team. Can he have that type of form? And now you see one performance where the team can come together and you see the quality that Everton have that you go, there's just no way that in the remaining fixtures that they're not going to be able to find a way to get some of those points. Having said that, it's not an easy pathway in terms of their schedule. And then I look at Leeds, by the way, and I had it up here a second ago. Let me see if I still have it for Leeds' schedule. But Leeds have – maybe I don't have it up in front of me anymore. But, yeah, Leeds have a difficult run as well. And so I don't want to say – do you have Burnley's schedule up anywhere? Let me see.
Yeah, I'm going to give it to you right now. Well, let's talk about Leeds United, which you just mentioned. By the way, before we do that, Des Norris, I believe you have a good video of what was going on outside the Chelsea Hotel before this game against Everton. This was what was going on. Obviously, I love it. It's getting really South American, the Premier League, Heath Pearce. It's like, you know, trying to keep them awake right before a game. Pretty impressive. And the fireworks display is pretty impressive.
That is a good firework display. Somebody spent a lot of money on that because those do not look like cheap fireworks. if you can see them above all of the buildings, then that was an investment made by a wealthy person to throw them off. So it's certainly going to be a hard one. And then, you know, again, Burnley play Villa, they play Spurs
twice,
and then they play Villa, and then they play Newcastle. So I don't want to say it's certainly not an easy one for sure, because if you're Burnley, you're grinding everything right now. But when I look at that, I go, there's probably some points there. When I look at Everton's schedule, it's again decent. You know, they play Palace, like you said, they play Brentford. They play Watford, should be able to get points there. And then they finish the season against Arsenal. And so those seem a little bit easier than the Leeds one, if I remember correctly. Leeds schedule is to wrap up the season is they play
the Leeds one, I got for you.
They've got Arsenal, they got Chelsea, and then they got Brighton and Brentford. So Brighton and Brentford are their main fixtures, right? That they're going to focus on. Now, maybe you can get a point out of Arsenal. I doubt it. Maybe you get a point out of Chelsea. I doubt it because you're at home in that one. You're away to Arsenal. But the Brighton and the Brentford are the two matches that you're going to have to get points out of. And Brentford's in good form again. They stopped their sort of nosedive. And Brighton are in fantastic form in the top half of the table. So only one loss in, I think, the last five or six. And so it's not looking good for Leeds in terms of needing points, you know, but they seem to be motivated. They seem to be, I mean, not this weekend, they got battered, but like they seem to have a little bit of this, like never say die attitude to them that they had already, but with a little bit more structure under Jesse Marsh. The fans were obviously chanting, you're going to keep us in the Premier League, you're going to keep us up. But it's a long road. And if I were to look at the power or the strength of those three schedules, Leeds certainly has the hardest path to getting, say, 6 points out of their next four games in order to stay alive. I do think 6 points stays alive. Will keep you in the league for sure. That's 50% wins in their final four games. That's a lot. But if they can get six, I could see them doing it. But it's going to be hard.
It's a key injury as well for Leeds with Stuart Dallas. Obviously, our best thoughts with him. He came out on a stretcher. That didn't look good. That's going to be important. And obviously, the game in hand that Everton have as well is going to be key. And Burnley, well, listen, I mean, under interim boss Michael Jackson, you know, they're going to be starting something. It's you like what I did there? Want to be starting something, Michael Jackson. There you go. Yeah, all right. Well, I'll stop on that one. We're going to take a break, Des Norris. As soon as I said that joke, let's take a break. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll give you the Champions League reports as well as the rest of Europe, including Serie A, Bundesliga, the Old Firm, final thoughts, and much more. Diego Lasso Weekend Recap, HP, LME. We'll be right back.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back, everybody. Diego Lasso, Weekend Recap, HP, LME. We've done the Premier League. Let's talk a little bit about the Champions League report. Obviously, well, this includes two Premier League teams, of course, and two Spanish teams. But the Champions League, which you can watch exclusively on CBS Sports and Paramount Plus, will be giving you all the preview action, and we'll be recapping the games on Diego Lasso as well, as always. So make sure that you stay tuned with us. And just to keep you up to date and update you, obviously, if you don't know, Villarreal now hosts Liverpool. That's Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. And they're losing 2-0 in that one in aggregate. And Real Madrid are hosting Man City. And that was a ridiculous game, of course, 4-3. They're trailing Man City. Very quick Champions League reports here. Heath Pierce, Villarreal, they lost to Alaves. And Liverpool just about won against Newcastle. What do you give in reports as they look up to the second leg in this one?
I mean, the Villarreal one, I think they started three of the same players that they did in the Champions League. So they were clearly throwing it all into this. And when I watched that game, by the way, Liverpool complete. Like, I just didn't see anything from Villarreal where you go, well, we'll take it home and we'll be able to get the results. Like, they looked completely outmatched. It was one of the worst one-sided Champions League games I had seen at this stage of the competition in a very long time. So I worry about, like, you know, maybe you get that first punch in the first 15 minutes and that gets you back into it and the team comes to life in a different way than they did in that match. But against Liverpool, it just seemed few and far between. But clearly they believe there's something there because they rested. Again, I think they had three of their starters in that game over the weekend where they ended up losing to Alaves. So they believe something. They don't believe it's over, and it's only 2-0, and so there is an opportunity for that. So overall, though, it's just from a rating system, you never want to come off a loss going back into like a loss and then a loss, even if it is a different squad. They clearly don't have the depth for that to be able to play as many matches at this point in the season and arresting their best players to try to get a result against Liverpool, who, again, were dominant for almost start to finish over the weekend over Newcastle. Newcastle didn't play particularly well. Liverpool controlled from the very beginning. There's a comfort right now with Liverpool, by the way. If you're a Liverpool fan, you know you're going to create hundreds of chances. Now, they only got one goal. That's a little bit scary. But they rotated players as well, four or five big changes that were able to fill in and get the result. And again, save their legs for the second leg as well.
So with that, what grades would you give them for both sides heading into the second leg? Taking in mind, by the way, that there was rotation on both sides. Newcastle really, I think, let one slip because I really feel they could have given a little bit more. And Villarreal equally, you know, I think showed a few colors. Unai Emery, by the way, said in the lead up to the second leg, you know, saying, look, we're going to have to change our mentality and our strategy in the second leg. So I'm expecting a different thing, and you have to. It's knockout competition. What grades do you give them as they head into the second leg?
Man, I thought you were going to avoid going back to me for the grades. I didn't want to give you the grades. But I mean, for Villarreal, I think they're a C in terms of, you know, if we're in our traditional American schooling system, I'd give them a C just because, again, like you said, they're going to have to change their mentality. That's tough to do, to go from one leg to the next. And playing away from home, they were just completely to the point where I was like, I'm kind of bored with this game. You know, Liverpool are just – Villarreal struggled to get out of their own box. They struggled to get out of their own half. And when they did, you know, I know there's the classic, like, at the best when Barcelona was at their best or Liverpool are at their best and they're pressing and they're chasing and they're doing these things that they really disrupt it. But at a Champions League semifinal, you should be able to break pressure once in a while, build up, get into your flow, attempt a few things. And there was none of that from Villarreal. So they're going to have to change. And I'm going to say – so I'm going to say C – based on the first leg, based on the fact that they rotated the squad and lost in La Liga and going back into this, it just seems too big for me to give them a higher grade in terms of momentum. And then obviously on the flip side, by the way, I'll go with an A for Liverpool. Rotated the squad, didn't miss a beat. Liverpool aren't as deep as I think we give them credit for in terms of the quality of players that they necessarily have if you're going to make 5-6 changes. But those players are motivated by this idea of, like, we've got everything to play for still. We're going to step in and we're going to raise or elevate our level to make sure that we are going after every point in the league and we're going after everything in the Champions League and the competitions that we're still in.
So, everybody, make sure that you like, subscribe, and tell us your score predictions for the Champions League second legs. We'd love to know for Villarreal, obviously, as they trail 2-0 to Liverpool and Real Madrid, as they only trail one goal as 4-3 with the Man City lead. What about Real Madrid, Man City there? Heath Pierce, very quickly on these reports. Real Madrid, by the way, well, the big report for them, they won 4-0 against Espanyol. Carlo Ancelotti becomes the first manager to win all top five leagues, by the way. He's won it with AC Milan, he's won it with PSG, he's won it with Chelsea, he's won it with Bayern Munich, and now he's won it with Real Madrid. A tremendous achievement. And look at that photo. I had to tweet this, Heath Pierce. Look at him. He's such a boss, man. I absolutely love this, man. Absolutely love it. What grade do you give Real Madrid, by the way, as they get ready for this big game against Man City?
I mean, the way I'm grading Real Madrid at the moment is I was thinking back. I was like, what did I say about them early on in the season? And we've continued to criticize them that, like, if Real Madrid are going to get Mbappe or they're going to get Haaland, they need 7 or 8 other players. And to be able to do what they've done in the league and to be able to do what they're doing right now in the Champions League within one goal of potentially one of the best teams in history at a club level, you know, not in the Champions League necessarily, because you got to, you know, to get that, you got to win some Champions League trophies. But in terms of the way that they play, the difficulty to play against them is nothing short of remarkable. And to see this team come together, the development of their players, and now to feel like they're maybe they need a few less pieces to be competitive next year. I'm going to give them an A+ for wrapping up the title when they did. Of course, without there being a Atletico Madrid pressure or a Barcelona pressure, it changes things. You know, it was really just Sevilla all season long, and I truly believe that Sevilla just don't have that power to be able to go. But to be able to do that now and to be in the position that they're in within one goal in the Champions League, I got to give them an A+, unless they're just completely hungover after winning the trophy. And I'm hoping that there was some, apple ciders that they were drinking over some of the other things. But Ancelotti had a cigar, so obviously they were taking in the moment, because it is a big deal to win any trophies in your career, and they should be celebrated.
Yeah, and speaking of transfer acquisitions that happened this season, David Alaba was key, and now he's won a league title every year since 2013. So that was a good one. And Man City equally won 4-0 against the aforementioned Leeds United, rotated. Jack Grealish was in there. Phil Foden did play, of course. Raheem Sterling, Gabriel Jesus continues to score. What grade do you give them as they faced a very hostile Leeds United, but Man City just too good in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I grade them the same as Liverpool, where I just think that they're kind of in that them, Real Madrid, maybe Real Madrid a little less as an A, but Liverpool and Man City as like A+, where it's going to literally come down to the final moments of the season with the form that they're in because of the chances they create, the confidence that they have. You know, there's not this time of year, I'm used to seeing nerves. You see the nerves on some players, on some teams, where the atmosphere, the implications get the best of them. But Man City just seems smooth, and Liverpool seems smooth, and they're chasing, right? And so, yeah, I'm giving them an A+. I mean, what a great time to give an A and two A+s heading into a Champions League week. Maybe I'm just trying to throw out there to make sure that these are good games. But, yeah, unbelievable teams right now. And in peak form, you know, in the final month of a season, it's usually you see some sort of dips along the way, but like Liverpool, perfect across the board. Man City, pretty perfect across the board in terms of, you know, league play. You have chasing a Champions League with Liverpool. You're chasing a league title with Liverpool. Granted, Liverpool's in every competition still, but just usually there's some sort of other storyline where it's like maybe they've fallen short or they're not great, but they're good in this competition. Just to see top teams staying at this top level at this round, this time of the year is unbelievable. So I'm chucking out A's to everybody. You know, I'm like that teacher in school who's just waiting for summer, feeling a little bit nice, you know, so just being like, oh, don't worry about what you did for me, 6 months ago. I'm giving everyone A's.
Yeah, it's like Oprah, right? You get an A, Yeah, but this second leg, though, I'm excited for them because Villarreal have to change mentality. So I'm expecting not a sit-back situation. And if we get like 50% of the Real Madrid-Man City game from what we saw last week, it should be pretty interesting. All right, let's move on to Serie A. Well, Juventus, by the way, they clinch a top four spot after beating Venezia. Bonucci, on his birthday, scores a brace. It's a 2-1 win. So good stuff for Juventus there, Heath Pierce. Milan, they beat Fiorentina. Rafael Leao settled the score for the Rossoneri. And, you know, that's great. Inter, by the way, do end up winning. So things remain tight. What do you make of all that? AC Milan, of course, tops the table still. Inter Milan down by 2 points. But Juventus is big for them to claim Champions League for next season.
Yeah, and also Napoli, a little bit too little too late in terms of getting the result that they did this weekend. You know, I just feel like they had a chance, and then to go out and batter Sassuolo is unbelievable. But just to have a few days or a week before that to lose to Empoli, they're pretty much in their chances of being in the title race. A week before that, a draw with Roma. A week before that, a loss to Fiorentina. So it's a frustrating time because Napoli, this was going to be one of those years. Very rarely do you get a Juventus in the state that they're in. Maybe it's going to be a few years before they can rebuild, but it was a year where three teams could have been vying into the final days for the Scudetto. And now AC Milan still sit on the top, not super convinced, but they seem like they've gone back to being able to figure it out and now sit 2 points clear with three games to go. It's pretty unbelievable. And we might just see a trophy from AC Milan, which I predicted, but sort of as a fan with a little bit of hope, but now we're getting closer to that. So I don't want to speak too much on that because I do think it would be good for the league if AC Milan, a club that size with that much history, were to go on and win the Scudetto.
I believe both of us, I know I did. I predicted AC Milan to win the whole thing at the very beginning of the season. I believe you were with me on that one, Heath Pierce. So, you know, we can do a humble brag. Well, it's not over yet. It's only 2 points. But, you know, the way that they keep going, it's pretty good. By the way, some Serie A clubs inspired by Burnley, maybe Cagliari, followed Venezia's decision to sack their manager, Mazzarri, with four games to go as well as, you know, they look towards the bottom of the table. That's there's a lot going on at the bottom of Serie A, Heath Pierce.
Listen, I've been at the bottom of a table, and I have been through a number of managers when things are tense and tough and they don't always make sense. But occasionally, when you know there's this much money on the line and it's not working, you have a conversation with a few players or even some of your wider staff, because some staffs will have like sort of that fourth assistant that's been there at the club legend, always around, you know, like a striker coach or a defender coach. And you have a word with your group and you just have to ask that question. Is this person capable of making it happen? And if the answer is no, you might get a lift out of just firing a coach and seeing if that helps the players sort of motivate going into the final point of the season. But I mean, you're looking at it. The problem is Salernitana now have two games in hand against Cagliari. How do you pronounce it? I've said it wrong.
Cagliari.
Cagliari. Cagliari. Yeah, one of my old friends and teammates played for them, a Swedish guy, and he would correct me then, and I feel like it got into my head, and now I can't ever say it right. But Salernitana,
yeah,
spelled wrong. Yeah, it's spelled wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. Salernitana.
See, this is why. It's because people are spelling it wrong to me. It's not my problem.
There's people, yeah, there's some drunk people in there. Yeah. Well, they play tomorrow and on Thursday. They're going to be facing Atalanta and Venezia this week.
Yeah. By the way, Milan face Atalanta in the second last game of the season in just 2 weeks' time. And that's going to be a crazy one as well if they want to be able to. Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but down at the bottom of the table, though, it is hairy. I remember we went, and I'll keep this off the record, but trying to position an opportunity for a follow documentary with Venezia, with their staff, with Paramount Plus and CBS. And their nervousness was like, we don't want to show behind the curtain here because of it is chaos, right? It looks beautiful because we've got these cool kit designs and they've got this really cool branding, but they're like behind the curtain, like this place is trying to figure itself out. It's growing from Serie D to all the way up to now Serie A. Like that's a fast way to get there. And so they were nervous about like, I know it seems romantic and we want to tell the story, but we've got to figure out how we're going to stay in the league first. And you can see now throughout the season, they've really struggled to really get a grip on at any point of staying stable for even 1, 2, 3 results in a row.
Well, I tell you something, the most exciting documentary I've seen was Sunderland Till I Die. And that's exactly what happened to them. They were trained. They were meant to record a story about Sunderland's triumphant return to the Premier League. And instead they went down to League One. So sometimes the stories are better than the situation themselves. By the way, Sunderland are in the playoffs for this one as well. So maybe they'll come back to the championship this time around. Who's going down to Serie B, by the way? I'm asking everybody out there, who do you think, Heath Pierce? Who's going down to Serie B? Who's getting relegated?
Man, I'm guessing Salernitana is in a fantastic run of form right now. I thought midway through the season, I was like, this team's finishing 20th. So I think they do jump. They've got a couple games in hand. And I think Cagliari is going to go down and be the third team to join Venezia and Genoa. I just don't see them being able to claw their way out. After that, it's three of those four teams. You're not going to get anybody else that goes down. So it's, you know, everybody else is pretty much safe in terms of points. So, but again, when I look at it, Salernitana have a busy schedule this week. They've got 5 games left and they are 3 points behind. So you never know down there. It seems like, you go 5 games, 3 points, they should be able to cover that delta, but it's not that easy. You know, all these teams could lose out and nothing would change. So I think we could see a jump though with Salernitana in the form that they're in, because they've just hit a nice little stride. And this is exactly when you want to hit a stride all season long. But if you're a relegation battling team, and most teams in Italy do come up just to go down again, they could be a surprise finish and stay safe in Serie A.
All right. Well, let's move on to the Bundesliga, Heath Pierce, a league that you know well, by the way. Obviously, we pretty much know what's going to, you know, everything pretty much sorted towards the top of the table. But there's still some other storylines. The race for fourth is a key one as well. 2 big games, by the way, on Monday to determine who joins Bayern and Dortmund in next season's Champions League. Gladbach against Leipzig, Leverkusen against Frankfurt as well, and Leverkusen against Freiburg on the final match day already feels pretty big. Erling Haaland, by the way, he did his thing as well. You know, even though they still lost, but, you know, the sale price and the interest, obviously, of Erling Haaland continues. He did his thing. Any thoughts on the Bundesliga there, Heath Pierce, a league that you know well?
I don't remember what happened with Bochum earlier this year, but I think they've beaten a couple teams pretty bad, and I think they've been beaten real bad. And I remember us talking about it, and I'm not going to be able to search their results fast enough to know, but I remember Bochum sort of being in the news quite a bit this year. But Freiburg is the one that's most surprising. I'd love to see Freiburg be able to slip in. Unfortunately, that would be at the sacrifice of an RB Leipzig, or it would be at the sacrifice of a Leverkusen. But Leipzig beat Leverkusen, so they're in that hunt, and then they go on to lose to Union Berlin, and so it's just a weird thing right now. You know, I'm trying to focus on like the positives of like, oh yeah, you know, Tyler Adams is getting games right now, but they might find themselves out of a Champions League spot with the form that Freiburg have been in. You know, look at Dortmund. Dortmund's lost more than Freiburg have so far this season. They just know how to grind out 3 points when they've got them in hand and not give it up and end up in draws. But it's going to be an interesting finish to the end of the season for the Bundesliga. Obviously, you know, that's why I didn't say much to Dez's point on David Alaba winning a league title since 2013. It's because he's at Bayern Munich. What do you want from me? You know, it's automatic. But it was spectacular to see because they were getting a lot of slack at the beginning of the season at Real Madrid saying, man, this team is not very good. And to win that, I think, is remarkable. Not to go back onto that point. But the top four finish in the Bundesliga is going to be a great one. And, of course, this is the time of year where you start to look at the bottom of the tables as well and start to go, man, there's a few teams fighting. And Hertha Berlin, barely, obviously, this is a 34 match league. Right? 18, 36?
Yep, that's
36,
right. Yep.
34?
Yep.
34 match. Man, my math is amazing right now.
I mean, I'm just
so
agreeing
you're coming down
you
to the end of it. Right. Yeah. Well, it's 17 times you play 17 games times two. Yeah, 34 games. So they've got two league games left. So Hertha might just be safe. Augsburg are likely safe. Not so much to the help of our boy Ricardo Pepi. But yeah, an interesting time of the year in the Bundesliga for sure. But again, this is the funny thing that I think about a lot. The Bundesliga is just stuck with 18 teams, right? And you look at some of the other leagues, and it's just, I wonder, is there enough quality to go to 20, or is 18 the right? And if what other leagues should implement 18 teams as well? Because we played, when I was in Denmark, by the way, 12 teams in the league. Two went down. It was kind of crazy compared to Germany, you know, 18 teams, which isn't even as many as the championship, you know?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's a dream. By the way, your point about Bochum, they got killed by Bayern Munich 7-0, and then later on they won 4-2. So Bayern Munich was their key there. We have a question, by the way, asking about Nico Schulterbeck. There you go. Do you think Freiburg lose them even if they make the Champions League 1 year left in contract?
I mean, probably. You got to cash in when you're a club. When you're a club that size, you cash in. You have to, because that sets up the stability. Freiburg historically are not a massive club in Germany. And so when you have these types of years, that's the fine balance. I mean, this literally goes back to the Spurs conversation, and they're a massive club of like, what do you do? Champions League, you get the money, you keep this team together. You've got Harry Kane, who's in fantastic form, even though he was completely out of it for the first 3 months of the season. It's a very difficult question of keeping managers and keeping players when you go into to Champions League. If there's an opportunity to move them on, that could be significantly beneficial to not only the Champions League money you get, but then you add that to the opportunity to move players on and the fee that could come with that, that could trickle down for quite a ways for a club the size of Freiburg.
Yeah, it's part of the Bundesliga philosophy as well, to just try, you know, unless you're like Bayern Munich or somebody, trying to, you know, create this, you know, level where you can become a transferable business club and company.
Well, he's all just right. Going to end up at Bayern Munich anyway. He's just going to end up at Bayern Munich anyway. You know?
Exactly.
Bayern, the whole league is built around Bayern. Feeding Bayern. So. Yeah,
exactly. All right. Well, that was it. Let's do our final thoughts here. Obviously, the Old Firm is the main point of our final thoughts. It ended 1-1 that you were able to watch on Paramount Plus, CBS Sports, of course. Celtic, 6 points clear with 3 matches to go. Rangers are still alive in Europa League and Scottish Cup final, and Hearts still to come. So a lot to play for everybody involved. Some other final thoughts. Renato Sanchez there with 2 yellows for descent within 5 seconds of each other, and Lille lose 3-0. I don't know if you saw the footage, by the way, but in Turkey, Trabzonspor, they won their first Super League title in 38 years, and the town, which is in the Black Sea province, they went absolutely nuts. All the phones were up. It was kind of like a Justin Bieber concert. It was amazing. Wigan, they win League One. So they're in the championship. Pretty amazing for them. And Sebastian Ferreira scored a ridiculous goal in the Texas Derby in MLS. But Houston still lost 2-1 to Austin. So Michael Lahoud, aside from getting married. And look, there's by the way, the scenes in Turkey. Amazing. As Trabzonspor won their first Super League title in 38 years. Final thoughts, Heath Beers. You can mention anything that I mentioned. Look at that. Strobe lights. It was crazy. Any final thoughts from this weekend that we didn't mention, buddy?
Angel City won their league match, which was awesome to see. A sold-out crowd at Bank of California Stadium was really cool, unbelievable. I didn't get a chance to go to the game. But I plan to go to quite a few, obviously, with my kids. But it was just that was a cool little moment in time for the league, and with a league that's still averaging a pretty low attendance across the league. Hopefully, this starts to elevate things like that. And then the final thing was Lille losing that game. I mean, they're going to fall out of Europe, and Lille. What I worry is what we talked about with Team Auea, Champions League club, you know, champions, like all this stuff. Now it just becomes Lille again. And if you, yeah. He needs to be playing at Lille, right? Like it's a completely different narrative of like, look at all the clubs that our players are playing at, that Lille just becomes a French Ligue 1 club. And now he's got to be playing at there, not even the size of like a Marseille where Conrad is. So it's one of those situations where I go, man, where's the future go for him? Is this the right place? Can he have the impact? He played and he wasn't one of the ones subbed off in all the craziness of the red card. And it might've been the second red card in that game, but yeah, I worry about that for him. But other than that, yeah, man, it's great to see you again, LME. Great to see you.
I love you, man. I love you. Love having you. Just one final note on Lille. They're prepared to sell Jonathan David, by the way, per our Fabrizio Romano. So be ready for that one. But the other final note, Nashville opening up their new stadium as their host, Philadelphia Union at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can see that one. But Heath Beers, always a pleasure to have you, man. Love you, brother. It's always good. In soccer, we trust Heath Pierce at Heath Pierce. Obviously, he'll be a continuous part of our family as well. But in soccer, we trust 3 times a week. Or is it 4 times now? I've lost count, man. I don't know. You guys keep
we're
growing.
We are 3 at the moment. But I miss all of you guys that tune in and day out for Kay Galasso. It's been a lot of fun. I miss you all. And I look forward to joining you guys again soon.
Absolutely, brother. Heath Beer, thank you so much. Have some fun there in Phoenix. Make sure that you stay cool, man, because it's nice and hot out there. But HB, thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Woo.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for being part of the family. Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter, youtube.com/ Qué Golazo. Remember, our YouTube channel, we keep growing. Please continue to like and subscribe and spread the word. Champions League second leg semifinals coming up. We got Fabrizio Romano to open up the week on Monday morning, as well as our Champions League previews. I just said we have the recaps, we have so much more. And look at all those kids. Support us with Alianza de Fútbol. El sueño continues for all of those who keep trying to make their dream of being a professional player continuing. I love it. Is there a website, Heath Pierce? Alianza de Fútbol still going? Is it just a Ventures one? What's going on?
Yeah. AlianzaDeFutbol.com. There's a website. But, you know, 10-city tour. We'd love to see everybody come out and, you know, hopefully we can provide more opportunities and accessibility for everyone in the Hispanic soccer world.
Preach, brother. Preach. That's why you're an adopted Latino, man. I'm doing it for you right now. I'm officially adopting you. And also, you live in Cali, so you basically are as well. But thank you, everybody, for being part of the family. Qué Golazo Pod on Twitter, youtube.com/ Qué Golazo. Have a great rest of your Sunday. We will see you next time. HB, LME, see you next time. Till then.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.